Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Royal Oak, and at age 14, she decided to become a minister. She's the senior pastor of Cass Community United Methodist Church and the executive director of Cass Community Social Services. She runs marathons and attributes her achievements to her philosophy, when you get tired, you just keep running. Her name, Pastor Faith Fowler, and we're honored to have her as our guest. I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now, back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Crisula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Pastor Faith Fowler. Pastor, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thanks for having me, Jack. It's great to be here.
Let's start with your childhood and your parents. What can you tell us about them?
My dad was a teacher here in Detroit. Over 20 years at Pershing High School, he taught history and economics. So we were always going on family trips to Civil War battlefields. My mom taught what was called special ed years ago for students with developmental disabilities and people who were mentally ill. Later in life, she worked at Meyer Thrifty Acres and helped me put me through college. I have three siblings, all brothers, or had. My eldest brother is deceased, and we grew up here in Detroit until I was about in junior high, and then went to Royal Oak and finished growing up there.
How old were you when you decided you wanted to be a minister?
I was in junior high school, 12, 13 years old, and went to see our family pastor and told him. And he thought perhaps I was confused and told me to go home and think about it some more. And so from that point on, I really kept it to myself until I was really done with college, and then pursued it despite his advice.
Did you tell your parents when you were 14 what you wanted to do?
Nope, didn't. I was really a shy kid. I'm still socially shy today. People don't believe it, but it's true. But no, I didn't. Once the pastor said I was wrong, I kept it in my heart, as it says about Mary in Scripture.
How does one become a minister?
Well, there are different ways to do it, even within the United Methodist Church, but clearly among denominations and faith groups, there are different ways to do it. Within our denomination, most people go away to seminary after an undergraduate degree, and upon completing the academics, then they apply through a board of ordained ministry and come in that way.
Where did you go to college, and where did you go thereafter?
I went to Albion College and loved it. Great school here in Michigan. When I was done, though, I was broke. and so worked for a couple of years at the Methodist Children's Village, which works with abused and neglected kids. And simultaneously worked at a church in Beverly Hills, a Methodist church there with youth. And that's where I first preached, actually, from their pulpit. I preached there recently. It was funny to go back. And then I went off to Boston University School of Theology.
When you got through with school completely, what was your first parish?
I began serving on the west side of Detroit, a church called William S. Ford Memorial. The funny thing about it is that I really wasn't sure I wanted to end up as a local pastor. I spent my time in Boston working with a Catholic chaplaincy team in Walpole Prison, which is their equivalent of Jackson. It's a maximum security prison for men, and I loved it. I really had a good experience there, learned a lot about incarceration, learned a lot about myself. But when I was appointed to this local church, I found out that there's a real richness to sort of the whole spectrum of life. you know, birth and children and young adults and middle-aged adults and senior adults. And so I'm glad I was appointed to a church and, as opposed to an institution.
What did you learn from the prisoners?
Well, I learned to think about things systemically and how we deal with crime and how we deal with people. I tend to believe that everybody deserves a second chance, even if that's a 100th chance, that everybody can contribute something, even if they need to be locked up. I learned how difficult it is on families, especially children, when their father, in that case, although it's equally true with women, are incarcerated for long periods of time. I learned how much they look like the people I knew at college, young and healthy and bright, and how disappointing it is that that they ended up where they were.
53,000 people incarcerated in the state of Michigan alone. 2.2 million in America. A couple of weeks ago, we had Mike Timmis on, the chairman of Prison Fellowship International.
Absolutely. Good group.
Japan, a country of 150 million, 83,000 people, he said, incarcerated. We, 300 million, 2.2 million.
Yeah, we're very lopsided, obviously, and it's such a waste. It's such a waste all the way around. And living and working where I do now, I certainly understand that we can't allow people to act and to have behaviors that are destructive in the community. But the cost of incarcerating someone is $45,000 a year, which is the cost of a Harvard education. It seems to me we need to be much more aggressive about preventative work and real rehabilitation.
We're talking to Pastor Faith Fowler, the senior pastor of Cass Community United Methodist Church. And when we come back, we'll ask her about how that came to be. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Pastor Faith Fowler. Cass Community Social Services is an agency that works with the hungry, homeless, seniors, at-risk youth, the mentally ill, developmentally disabled, persons with HIV/AIDS, and Alzheimer's. Phenomenal what you're doing. Can you talk about it?
Sure. I'd love to talk about it. Cass Community really began all of its social ministries programs during the Great Depression here in the city. During the Depression, one out of three homeowners lost their homes. So there was a horde, a mass of people who were desperate almost overnight. And that congregation, the church, began a gleaning process, just like from the Book of Ruth, whereby the pastor and some key lay leadership went out into the rural areas, which then were Dearborn and, you know, Ferndale, Warren, and began picking up the extra crops, the tomatoes, potatoes, corn, and brought it back and started a soup kitchen that has never stopped. We feed three meals a day, 7 days a week, 15,000 meals a week, which all sounds very cut and dry. Those are meals for senior citizens who are homebound. They're meals for homeless people who don't have shelter. They're for people who do have homes but run out of money towards the end of the month because, you know, they're paying for prescriptions and other things that are escalating in price. They're meals for developmentally disabled people, perhaps from group homes, so that they're a special warm meal midday. But that's where it all began, long ago and far away, before I, you know, was even born. It's a long, proud tradition of ministry. And then over the years, this congregation has seen needs that aren't being met by other churches or agencies and has tried to meet them whenever possible. And really, during the 60s, we began all of the work with the developmentally disabled who were being deinstitutionalized, and then later with the mentally ill who were being deinstitutionalized, and began a couple free medical clinics, in particular because our area, our zip code, was had the highest statistics in the state for every disease you could think of. And so Dr. Castilla started by volunteering and using interns from Wayne State to come in and deal with folks who had high blood pressure or AIDS or were victims of violence and needed care but were afraid to go to the hospital. I think sometimes people don't understand that although the hospitals do and have to care for people without insurance are leery of going. Because most of their friends are also without insurance, and by the time somebody finally does go, they're usually in such desperate straits that they die there. So a hospital isn't a place that they think of for healing and restoration, but a place for death when you give up. And so, people come in, children, men, women, seniors come in, and the doctors and interns treat them with great care, and even the prostitutes come to our clinics and are seen and treated with the same dignity and respect you'd be treated with in your physician's office. It's a wonderful thing. And I think that's one of the things CAS does well, is it remembers the people more than the numbers. Whether you're homeless or whether you have mental health issues, it's all about connecting to the people and trying to help them help themselves.
Can you talk about the numbers of meals per day, how many drop in each day, et cetera, et cetera?
Sure. Meals, I mentioned before, 15,000 a week, so that our kitchen starts at 6 in the morning and runs till 5 or 6 at night every day of the year. Even, for instance, a couple years ago we had the blackout. Try cooking a couple thousand meals with no water and no electricity. It was quite a couple day period. But it doesn't matter. People are hungry every day, and so we attempt to respond in ways that are helpful. Homeless people, we provide permanent shelter, temporary shelter. We have Michigan's only safe haven for mentally ill homeless men. We run the rotating shelter for Detroit, Wayne County, the warming center for homeless women and children in Detroit. So during the peak of the winter months, we can impact 500 or 600 homeless people a day.
You have 100 staff members.
We do.
5,000 volunteers.
Yes.
What do you do in the way of Detroit detainees?
Well, a few years ago, we responded to a request for a proposal, an RFP, to provide meals for the people who are picked up by the police in the city of Detroit. And now we're on our third or fourth year. We make the meals, which are sandwiches and juice and crackers that go out to every police precinct here in the city. It's helped us generate some funds to cover meals that aren't paid for, but also to establish some good relationships with the Detroit police officers who, as you might suspect, work very hard and are underpaid and need support.
What's your annual budget, and how do you get the money?
Annual budget right now is $4.5 million. Much of it is grant money, federal, state, county, and city levels. Some of it is foundation money, and clearly a good chunk that fills up the gap comes from individuals and churches or religious groups.
If somebody wants to get involved and help, how do they do it?
They can call us, 313-883-2277, or they can go to our website at cascommunity.com or cascommunity.org.
Faith, everywhere you go, you see needs. How do you decide which needs to get involved with and which ones not to get involved with?
Well, we can't be all things to all people, that's for sure. We really look for things and people in situations that aren't being handled or dealt with by someone else. If somebody can do it better, is what I always say to both the staff and the church, let them do it. We don't need to do it. We have enough to do. If nobody's doing it, it needs to be done, then we have to do it. We have to find a way to do it. And God has been good. There aren't many times we have to close the door on somebody who's truly in need.
A while ago you said that you don't look at it as numbers, you look at them as people. When we were sharing lunch a couple weeks ago, you told me what the number one killer of African-American women between the ages of 24 and 45 in Detroit is. Could you share that?
Yes, it's HIV/AIDS. It's hard to believe. So often we think of women having trouble with breast cancer or heart disease, but it's AIDS still. And in a way, it links us to third world countries, or two third world countries, as they say, because it's killing people. It's killing African American women here in Detroit. And there are some good organizations and some good resources, but clearly not enough. And so we're getting ready this year. We've got an architect right now drawing plans for a new residential facility that will accommodate some of the women struggling with AIDS.
We're talking to Pastor Faith Fowler, who runs marathons. She runs 5 miles a day, and the best she's done at the Boston Marathon is 3 hours and 50 minutes. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Pastor Faith Fowler, who decided to become a minister at age 14. Faith, that's a great name for a minister, by the way.
Thank you. So, my mother read it in a book.
Can you share with us, tell us about the Miss Cass pageant?
Yeah, about my second year at Cass, the director of the program came to me and asked if we could have a beauty contest. And to tell you the truth, I was not in favor. I'm not a beauty contest kind of gal. And so I said no. And she responded that I needed to stop and think about the decision for a moment, because people who are developmentally disabled, and it simply means they stop developing intellectually, that they don't have milestones the same way we do. That most people, although they don't do the same things or identical things, there are common points in life that we all share and enjoy and look forward to, like graduating or learning to drive or going to college or getting married. All of those things we look forward to, we look back on, they mark our lives. They don't do those things. And so consequently, she wanted to create an event that would give them the same sort of impact. And the first year, we had roughly 35 women, and there, I believe, were 27 people in the audience, most of them my relatives who owed me a favor. And they came in evening gowns, formals from weddings and proms that people donated to us. And they did talent. They read poems and sang songs and danced. Sometimes the dancing was a little wild, but it was always heartfelt. And it was their chance to shine. It was their chance to be the center of the universe. And at the end of the night, someone is crowned Miss Cass. And, of course, we involve developmentally disabled men who likewise try on tuxedos for the first time in their lives and serve as escorts. But the whole notion is it creates an opportunity for people to set goals, to work at skills and talents, to show off a little bit, show their stuff, as Paula Tutman has said, and for people to come and encourage them to be the congregation or the supporters to applaud them on. And it's grown now over the years so that last year, and it's always the first Saturday in December, last year we had standing room only in a sanctuary that seats 300 people. And people come from as far away as Alpena and Frankenmuth. Youth groups come just to help dress and to applaud. And by the end of the night, people have laughed and cried and loved and hugged and carried on. It's an event that's hard to describe, but it helps everyone focus on what's really important, and that I know is how well we love, and that's what that night is all about. It's not about making money or anything else. It's a great event. And of course, we'd like you to be a judge this year, Jack.
Well, I've gone the last couple of years. I've walked out with a little more bounce in my step, a little more hope in my heart, and I'd be honored to be a judge.
Great.
Okay. We're talking to Pastor Faith Fowler. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Pastor Faith Fowler, the Executive Director of Cass Community Social Services. Faith, in these last 11 years, the people that you've been ministering to, what have they taught you?
Well, they've taught me many things. Perhaps first they've taught me how blessed I am to live in a time, in a place, from a family that I come from, that I've had the opportunity to get an education, that I'm lucky enough to do what I love doing, to serve and get paid for it, if you will. All those things are a blessing, and not to take that for granted. I've also learned that every human being has a story, and whether that's someone who's homeless or someone who's mentally ill or a kid who's growing up in a family where both parents are addicted to drugs, or our staff members, our volunteers, our donors, everybody's got a story, and if you really take the time to get to know the story, it makes a tremendous difference in how you appreciate people and what they've been through. And the last thing has been a very clear lesson, and it comes with great regularity, and that is God will provide. When you're up against a wall of paperwork or bureaucracy or bill collectors or, you know, payrolls you don't think you're going to meet or buildings you don't think you're ever going to open, God will provide. God will provide the people. God will provide the money. God will provide the resources. God will provide the faith. It's not about me. It's not about us. It just isn't.
You must get down at times depressed. Where do you get the daily nourishment from?
A good success story will carry you a long way. A woman went through our culinary arts program, which is a vocational training program for homeless or unemployed individuals, where they learn basic kitchen skills, serve-safe skills during 12 weeks, and job readiness skills. She went on to, she was homeless. She went on to get an apartment, to get a job, to get a car, to get a raise, a promotion. She became a supervisor, and not long ago she hired another graduate from the program. And when she called me to tell me, I did cheetah flips. I was so excited, and will be forever, that that her life is dramatically different. And she deserves credit for it. I'm not trying to steal her thunder, but it carries you a long way when things aren't working out. When somebody gets back employment, when somebody moves into a new place, when somebody reunites with a family, when somebody stays clean and sober for 30 days or 60 days or 90 days or a year, that's enough.
You're a very optimistic person. You have a great sense of humor. How do you keep that through all of these trials and tribulations?
The humor comes from my family. My dad was a big joke teller, storyteller, and I attribute that to him. And it just comes naturally. I said at his funeral, and my mother reminded me the other day that our family wears stories and jokes like most people wear jewelry. That it's what we show off, and it gives us some stability, if you will.
The story that you told about that lady. Once in a while, you see people make great strides. Mm. They change their life. A lot of times, they don't change their life.
Sure.
Is there something similar about the ones that make the changes, the great strides?
It's the internal will. It's the person coming, reaching the conclusion that I'm going to do it. I really believe that. And we can do so much. We can lead them to water. They eventually need to decide that they're going to drink it. And that has nothing to do with poverty. That has nothing to do with city, suburban. I think it's true across humanity. Now, there are things that are complicated in the city. There are systems that are harder to deal with day in and day out. There's racism and classism and sexism and all the isms you can think of. But at the end of the day, so much has to do with a person's will. And I think doctors would tell you the same thing, too, that a person's attitude has so much to do with recovery and wellness.
If there's somebody out there in the audience tonight who's really up against it, financially, health in the family, etc., etc., what advice would you give them?
Hang on. Hang on and find somebody to talk to. If you don't have anybody to talk to call. Call Cass. We'll find someone to listen and help you go through your options. And there's always a way. God will make a way. There's a great song. God will make a way out of no way. And I believe that.
A few weeks ago, we watched in horror, hour by hour, day after day, Hurricane Katrina.
Hmm.
As the people you minister watched that and talked about it, what were their thoughts? What were their comments?
Well, often in the drop-in center, which is where homeless people come to take care of emergency services, for instance, to take a shower, to wash their laundry, to have a meal, that sort of thing, we have CNN on the TV to help people stay connected to the world. And as the reports started to come back about the number of people who are dead and the number of people who are flooded out, but particularly the number of people who became homeless, our homeless started a very small, but I think spiritually significant, collection to send to the people who were newly homeless down south.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. We're talking to Pastor Faith Fowler, who's been the senior pastor of Cass Community Methodist Church since 1994. And 6 months into her ministry there, she almost quit. When we'll come back, we'll talk about it. I'm Jack Crisula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Crisula.
Welcome back. We're with Pastor Faith Fowler. Faith, you've been in this ministry for 6 months. It's late 1994. You're on the verge of leaving. What happened?
Well, the church at that point was in serious financial straits. We had people coming to retrieve our vans and turn off our lights. And beyond that, I discovered that I really wasn't qualified to do what I was sent to do. There was a lot of grant writing, many audits, staff to supervise. I really didn't have any training in the basic areas. And one day in December, I was sitting in my office that was accessible to anybody walking into the church, and a knock came at my door. Bear in mind, I'm feeling very sorry for myself, surrounded by mountains of paperwork, and this rattling came on the door, and given that I've had this very fine pastoral education at one of the best seminaries in the country, I yelled, "Go away, I'm busy!" The person, the intruder on the other side of the door, started hammering, pounding the door in its frame so much so that you could even see it moving in place. And now, because I've been trained in all the great theological ideas about I, thou, and treating people with empathy and compassion and respect and all that good stuff, now I yell, "All right, then, come in!" You know, not very kind or Christian at all, and the door swings open at a glacial speed, ever so slowly, but there standing on the other side of the door was a woman by the name of Linda, who I knew from the streets. She was a hooker, but even if I hadn't known her or her chosen profession, I would have guessed in short order, because she was dressed provocatively, very tight clothing, loud clothing, hair that was suggestive, and makeup that was way too thick. And she pointed her index finger right at my face and she said, "Reverend Fowler, you've got to get her off my corner." Now I'm thinking, wow, the bishop gave me authority. I just never realized, you know, what extent it goes to. But then I looked up from the paperwork I was surrounded by, and there, standing next to Linda, is a child, a little girl. She's 12 years old, and I can't think of anything to say. After all those years of school, all those years of ministry, I'm at a complete loss for words, because I just didn't expect it at all. And so I called for a social worker who came in and removed the child, started dealing with her issues, and Linda sat down at my desk and she said something to me I'll never forget if I live to be 100 years old. She said, "You know, Reverend Fowler, I wasn't so much worried about the competition, but I looked at that little girl and I saw myself, and I knew that the church could save her."
Are you hopeful about the future of Detroit?
I am. I love Detroit. I love everything about it. I love the parks, the main streets, the business, the mixture of people. We certainly have had tough times here, and the economy presently is making it harder. Clearly for everyone, but I am optimistic. I see new buildings going up. I see people coming back, black and white, and every other color and culture. We have our problems. Big cities have problems, but I think there's a great spirit of optimism, and there's a sense that as the city goes, so goes the region. So there's a sense that we need to be tackling problems together, and that problems can be overcome.
What has to change?
I think the two biggest things that stand in the way of the future of Detroit are the school system. I told you my father was a teacher, so I believe in public education, but it's a big system. And it needs to be modified. The second thing is security. We're struggling right now with layoffs for police and firefighters. It's probably the area we least need to be cutting back, and yet I understand balancing a budget. But if you're going to have people moving back in, if you're going to reverse the exodus, if you will, you've got to guarantee them good schools, and you have to have them believe in their gut that they're going to be safe. And I think everything else will follow.
What's your biggest challenge today? What do you pray about?
Oh, on the social services side of things, obviously the gas problem is going to be huge for us. We have 15 vehicles on the road, three of them buses, a couple trucks, and the rest vans that deliver people to and from programs, food to and from homebound seniors, even the homeless children. They all go to different schools, so every morning we're off to 20 or 25 different schools. And you know, a 50-cent increase in gas gets compounded when you talk about the number of vehicles we have on the road. On the church side of things, we have a very wonderful congregation that's small, but terrifically diverse, black and white, city and suburban, American and from foreign countries, but small, as I mentioned, and they're struggling with a roof that needs to be replaced. On the sanctuary that houses Tiffany windows and the largest 19th century pipe organ in the state of Michigan. So it's a beautiful historic building that has some deferred maintenance, in particular the roof.
How much do you need for the roof?
The total bill is $60,000. The church so far has raised $15,000.
Who are your heroes?
Mahatma Gandhi. Martin Luther King would be at the top of the list.
Why?
They were able to change history in ways that didn't require violence. They were able to understand that love is the only way to win.
If a young person out there, or a middle-aged person, is thinking about becoming a minister, what advice would you give them?
The same advice a pastor gave me, a man by the name of John Bray, who was out in Birmingham, said, if you can think of anything else to do, do it. That you have to really feel called, that there's nothing else in life that'll make you happy. And if that's so, nothing else in life will. And ministry, even on its worst days, will make you happy.
What are you the proudest of?
Probably our work with mentally ill homeless men, because it's not a very popular program. It's many people want to help children. Children are cute and wonderful, and they're the promise. It's much harder to involve people midstream, midlife, and yet we've one of the things from this program is a choir, a gospel choir that. Most recently went to Washington, D.C. to sing across the street from the Supreme Court and put a focus on mental health issues. Again, bringing people back to see the people in the issue and how what a contribution they might make to the larger society.
Faith Fowler, I take my hat off to you. The job you're doing is phenomenal. Thanks.
Thank you, Jack.
Our guest next Sunday will be Rhonda Walker, Channel 4's news anchor in the morning. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because anything is possible. Spoken.
Believe in yourself.